is an honor to present the Public Professor team. It is myself. Then sitting next to me is the Deputy Public Professor, Advocate Kevin Malunga. Next to him is the Acting Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Lufuno Ndoe. Next to Mr. Ndoe is Acting Strategy Support Senior Manager, Ms. Machabane Motiba. We also are accompanied by our Parliamentary Liaison Manager, Ms. Benita Young, the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Kennedy Kapusa, the Public Protector Representative for the Western Cape, Ms. Sune Crystal. Not within my sight are two other members of the Public Protector team, the spokesperson and acting chief of staff, Ms. Palalelo Masidi, and her secretary, Ms. Sibongi Lefosa. Thank you, sir.
We received your documentation. I guess you need enough time. We allocated 40 minutes. I just want to check if that would be fine for presentation.
That will do. We'll try and limit it to that.
Okay. No, fine. I think the floor is yours.
Chairperson. Sorry, before we get to the Public Protector, I think it would be remiss of us as a committee to just go about things as if it's business as usual. I think we are all mindful, hopefully, of the Nkandla judgment of last week. And while I don't want to talk about the findings of the court about the enforceability of the remedial action, I want to talk about the scathing comments, first of all, in the judgment about Parliament and the failures of Parliament. And I want to say in that sense, I think this finger was pointed directly also at this committee. I also want to say that we've also heard from the presiding officer of Parliament that she has indicated that she indeed regrets the personal remarks and personal way the engagements with the Public Protector last year were conducted by this committee. And if we are to learn anything from the Nkandla judgment, and if we are to turn this ship that is Parliament around to fulfill our oversight function in the correct manner, I think the first step that must be taken today is that this committee must apologize to the Office of the Public Protector, but also to the person, Advocate Madonsela, for the personal way in which the engagements with her were conducted last year. It was unbecoming of Parliament to do it in the manner we did, even if some of us did not agree with her stance as to what the effect of her remedial actions was. I think it would be only proper for us to apologize and to try and normalize relationships with this very important Chapter 9 institution in the manner in which the Nkandla judgment also pointed us to assist and support this office. Thank you.
First correction, to say that Parliament and the President were before the court, not this committee. Secondly, that there is no reference at all to this committee in that judgment as far as I remember. And we are aware that different political parties may have different views on the matter. We don't want to bring political dispute into this meeting. What is happening is that the party that I represent myself has accepted that judgment and said that they will implement what comes out of that judgment. So I also not going to bring that responsibility of the party here. Here we want to deal with the matters before us, and we have 40 minutes for the presentation. We discuss that, and all political parties have another forum to engage on this matter. So, Honorable... forum, the Chief Whips Forum, the Parliament, they can engage on this matter. But I'm not going to have a situation where we use this forum to revive the debate and disputes of the past, because the court has pronounced itself, and I am not aware of any party that disagrees with the court. So the matters have been settled. It's not for this forum to deal with those matters. This forum is meant to allow the public protector to make the presentation as part of the budgetary process, and we don't want to waste their time by party political disputes. Honorable sir,
I accept that you say that we all accept the judgment, but I think beyond that, Chair, we've now got this National Speaker, the National Assembly Speaker, said she regretted the reception of Advocate Madam Serla last year in this budget committee. And you'll recall that I objected to the manner that the public protector was treated. And so we're not going into the judgment itself, although it did find a scathing indication of the parliamentary process. But I would think, and Chair, your own words were, we should not and cannot apologize when we say the report of the public protector is misleading and has misled the nation. Now, that was set aside totally. Those were your words in Parliament. So, Chair, we need to, at the very least, to apologize to the public protector for the manner that she was treated by this committee beyond the judgment itself. And I would think that, as a matter of courtesy, would be a manner that we could restore the relationship between this committee and the public protector, so that we could take, it's not party political posturing, Chair. And you'll recall that last year you very kindly heard me when I said that we should allow the public protector to continue when members wanted to send her back in and not allow her to make a presentation. So the Speaker has said that she regrets the hostile treatment the public protector received at this committee last year. So at the very least, from my side, Chair, I would suggest that we apologize, and I am prepared to apologize for, to the treatment that the public protector received last year. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think Honorable Horn will appreciate the engagement that we've had yesterday and the business that we're busy with this week. Yesterday we had to adjourn at around 10 o'clock because we are taking all entities that belong to the committee. So today, the matter that is before us is about the budgetary processes and the strategic planning of the Office of the Public Protector. I think to deviate from that we came here for, I think would be just will be collapsing the whole debate that we came here for. I don't think we must apologize for anything, Chair. It's just like when a judgment of a lower court has been dismissed by a higher court, the lower judge is not told that he must apologize for the judgment. It just sets aside everything automatically. I think we have less time today. We also have a very busy schedule. I think we must concentrate on this matter. If there is any other matter that the other political parties want us to discuss, we may have to set that for another day, not today. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to say that I think Honourable Gomes just covered me. Honourable Holmes, I think you're speaking for yourself. Maybe the DA wants to apologize for something. But we need to really get back to business that is meant for preparation for ETCs, which is about the budget of the entities that hold this place under the Department of Justice and Correctional Services. Honourable Swart says that the Speaker has actually apologized. Chair, I want you to make a follow-up on that, just to understand the apology that reference was made to this committee, what it is about, so that we can be in the position to engage on it informed. But for now, I think what is important is to really take into consideration that we are using these budgetary processes, and we have a number of entities that we need to see because we've got timelines, so that you don't waste a lot of time. Yesterday we managed to see four entities, and this is why the report says that we actually knocked off around 10 o'clock. We want to do the same thing today. We still have to see the South African Human Rights Commission, Legal Aid South Africa, and let's be afforded the opportunity to do our work. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Member, Parliament.
Very briefly, I didn't say the Speaker has apologized. I just said that the Speaker has regretted. She indicated she regretted the hostile reception of the Public Protector. That's all. She hasn't apologized yet. Thank you.
And accept that Parliament, in Parliament, you have a diversity of ideas. In Parliament, you have a battle of ideas. And that's good for a multi-party democracy. But we must choose the right forum for the work. Today, as it has been correctly pointed out, we are here dealing with a budgetary process. And if there are issues, let issues arise from the presentation of the Public Protector. So we don't want to preempt her work, and we don't want to eat her time. We want her to have enough time, because there are important issues that we are going to deal with. Honourable Advocate Matosana, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, and Members of the Public. It is an honour to present the budget of the Public Protector South Africa for the year 2016-17, which budget has been allocated by Treasury as 363 million point three. But may I just take this opportunity to congratulate the newly appointed Chief Whip of the African National Congress, Mr. Jackson Mchenge. We are here to request the National Assembly to approve the budget allocation of 263.3 million. We also are requesting the National Assembly to approve our strategic plan and annual performance plan for the year 2016-17. The strategic plan to be approved is for the year 2016 to the year 2021. I'm also requesting, Honourable Chairperson, that the organizational structure be also be approved by the National Assembly. We will also make a request, which will be made by the Deputy Health Protector, to review the budget to make sure that this institution is accessible to all persons and communities, and that it is able to deal with the challenge of balancing promptitude and rigor effectively. As the Public Protector of South Africa, the budget remains anchored in Public Protection Vision 2020. It is also anchored in our strategic plan for 2016 to 2021 as our presentation. The presentation will be done by three of us, 15 minutes by me, 15 minutes by the acting chief of chief executive officer, and 10 minutes by the Deputy Public Protector. It will cover the following: introduction, strategic overview, flagship activities, overview of our programs, the budget allocation, the organizational structure, key delivery challenges, emerging risks, and concluding remarks. Honorable members, we meet shortly after the Constitutional Court has made the following about the importance of this office to the ordinary Gogo Dlamini. I quote, "The Public Protector is ours, one of the most invaluable constitutional gifts to our nation in the fight against corruption, unlawful enrichment, prejudice, and impropriety in state affairs, and for the betterment of good governance. The tentacles of poverty run far, wide, and deep in our nation. Litigation is prohibitively expensive and therefore not easily exercisable, and therefore not an easily exercisable constitutional option for an average citizen. For this reason, the fathers and mothers of our constitution conceived a way to give even to the poor and marginalized a voice and teeth that would fight corruption and abuse. Excruciatingly." There was the word of Chief Justice Mokoena at the Constitutional Court on the 31st of March, 2016. Our mandate remains the same, honorable members. Our vision remains the same. We revised our purpose as we were looking at what's happening around us, and we have concluded that our purpose as the Public Protector of South Africa is to protect the people from and by rooting out improper conduct and promoting good governance in state affairs. We remain with the same principles of accountability, integrity, and responsiveness, and the same values that we've heard in the last few years. However, the program and budget we'll be submitting today is underpinned by goals that have been clarified and sharpened in response to our delivery challenges and our environment. The first goal is prompt service. The second goal is access, which responds, of course, to the constitutional injunction to be accessible to all persons and communities. The third goal is efficiency, which is really about optimal usage of time and resources. The fourth one is impact, which is about not just investigating and taking water at the bottom of the waterfall, but making an impact by ending or rooting out improper conduct in the state institutions or organs of state we have worked with. The last goal is influence, which is really about acting as a catalyst to continue the project of transforming the state so that it adopts the character expected in the Constitution, the character of strong democracy, accountability, transparency, responsiveness, rule of law, and all of the other values in Section 1 of the Constitution and Section 96, which is about ethical governance. I will go straight, honorable members, to then just tell you very, very briefly about the some of the reasons we have decided to to streamline our strategy. We have built on the successes of the last 20 years. We are refocusing the work of the Public Protector to deliver more value, more impact, and to enhance our responsiveness. We're seeking to align our activities more closer to the imperatives in the National Development Plan, which has identified the Public Protector as one of the key institutions in fighting corruption and promoting good governance under Chapter 14. We also seek, honourable members, to assist government to respond to the impatient community cries for social justice and systemic service delivery challenges. We had, of course, to align our operations with the clarification of the powers of this office by the Constitutional Court, and we continue to help the state to transform itself to improve governance. In this particular case, we also seek to ensure that we assist our country, South Africa, to comply with the Sustainable Development Goals, particularly Goal 16 of the Sustainable Development Goals, and also to comply with Agenda 2063 of the level of the African Union. You will see there is a strategic objective that talks to clean governance by ourselves and talks to leading by example. There we're talking about enhancing internal governance in order to lead by example on clean governance. We also have streamlined our strategy in order to respond to financial constraints while optimizing operational efficiencies. And of course, we remain committed to balancing accessibility, rigor, efficiency, and impact. The budget, honorable chairperson and members, we are asking you to approve is the budget, as I've indicated, of 263 million. It will pay for the following activities that we ask you to note and then those. Investigative and ADR services provided in 20 service centers by the staff of 369. The staff includes 39 assistant investigators. The services will also include mobile clinics. Mobile clinics across the country in all of the provinces, and the CEO will explain the number of the mobile clinics that we are asking you to endorse. We are asking honorable members that you also endorse our implementation of an electronic case and customer relations management system to assist with management and monitoring of complaints and efficiencies. And that system is estimated at 50 million. I will indicate that we are only putting into the system 6 million, which is all we are going to be able to implement on this budget. But the Deputy Public Protector will talk to how we propose to deal with the rest. We seek to deal with the case backlog so that we can allow prompt justice for everyone. We have a huge backlog. We did a tremendous amount of work. I would like to thank the Public Protector team for the excellent work that has been done in the past year in reducing the backlog. But when it comes to complex cases, unfortunately, the backlog persists. We will be focusing on promoting ethical conduct in state affairs, which has implications for responsive action by leaders when problems are brought to their attention in line with the NDP. And of course, we would be asking that we do our best in a partnership for good governance to reduce unnecessary reviews. The strategy will explain how we propose to engage with stakeholders. We have a judgment that talks about our powers, but power is one thing, relationships is another. So the focus of our strategy will be around building functional relationships with Uganda state so that we have a common understanding of right and wrong, and we have a common interest in solving the problem. And we've done it successfully in the past year, but we'll be strengthening that. We will be expanding on the constitutional injunction to be accessible to all persons and communities, and by making sure that our investigations are more timely and remedies are implemented swiftly. Lastly, we will be strengthening synergies with ombudsman institutions to standardize approaches and ensure that we are able to be freed to operate as an institution of last resort. Just on the last one, there is a trend in our country, a good trend, that in each sector there's an ombudsman-like institution, military, SARS, local government, etc. And we'd like to encourage that trend. But with a trend of many ombudsman-like institutions, we are introducing diversity of approaches. So part of our strategy will be working with those institutions to systematize and standardize approaches. But just lastly, you will see in the whole strategy that in terms of focus areas in government, we have decided to narrow our focus to two key areas: the performance management system in government. You will see our strategy changed, and the reason we changed it was partly to address the deficiencies in the performance management system. And there is a disjuncture between excellent service delivery and the way the performance management system is conceived. And we've even started discussions around where to go. One province has agreed to experiment the new approach with us. We obviously would also want to be looking at ethics and corruption. And all of this is part of the conversation. Honorable Mendes, I would now like to hand over to the Acting Chief Executive Officer to take us very briefly into the program itself, based on 17 strategic objectives. Over to you, Mr.
Thank you, Public Protector. Through you, Chairperson, honorable members, we've identified the 17 strategic objectives. I'll just go through them quickly. The first one relates to adherence to defined turnaround times in investigations. I'm not going to indicate the reasons, therefore I'm sure the members have already gone through this. The second one relates to implementation of remedial action, and the third one speaks to speedy resolution of every matter that serves before us, and the fourth one, which relates to access, is ease of access, and the fifth one speaks to awareness. The sixth one is internal looking, which is operational efficiencies. So is the seventh one, which speaks to transforming our human resources to align them to internal competences in order to serve our business needs. The eighth one is to transform our ICT so that it optimally serves and supports our business needs. The ninth one speaks to financial stability as an organization. And the tenth one speaks to us having a strategic conversation about outsourcing key infrastructure and key facilities. The next one speaks to internal efficiencies as well, and is about the clean audit. The 12th one is about promotion of good governance. The PP spoke briefly about issues that we've identified that relate to the PMDS.
It also speaks to some of the issues that we've identified that deal with tenders, cronyism and nepotism in state organs. The 13th one is about exemplary conduct. It's also internal looking. The 14th one is about capacitating our human resources in order to deliver good quality and in a timely manner. And the 15th one is about development of ombudsmanship in Africa and beyond. And the 16th one is about ethical leadership. The 17th one speaks to us influencing government and parliament to amend the Public Protector Act in to be in line with the Constitution and then the recent court decisions that we all know about. Chairperson and honorable members, now I'll take you to the programs that then speak to the 17 strategic objectives that I've just mentioned. We have divided them into three. The first program speaks to administration, and the aim thereof is to create an efficient and effective and optimally funded organization so that we can, as an institution, perform optimally. The second one, which is really our core as an institution, is the program that speaks to investigation. This one, we are aiming to ensure that our investigations are prompt when we investigate matters of impropriety, maladministration, and also to provide timely remedies, as well as to promote good governance. The third program is stakeholder management, and its aim is to ensure that there is access to our services by members of the public, that we promote awareness, as well as ethical leadership in state affairs, and also to influence ombudsmanship in general. Just to take you to an overview of some of the key strategic objectives that we will be dealing with, and some of our key projects or targets for 2016 and 17. As relates to administration, we will obviously be looking at exemplary conduct, and one of the key projects there obviously is that we obtain a clean audit, operational office efficiencies, which is internal looking, and we've identified the implementation of an integrated security system as one of our key projects for 2016-17. And the one that I've spoken to, which is to transform our ICT to optimally support our business needs, I think the members can look at the key projects for themselves there in the interest of time. The next one I've already spoken to as well, which is capacitating our staff to provide good quality service and in a timely manner. And the total that we've allocated to this project, some of the programs are not indicated there, is 99.5 million for the current financial year, which is 16-17. The next one, which is our core, we've identified speedy resolution of every matter, and one of our key projects, and this is something that the Public Protector spoke to, is to finalize all cases which are 2 years and older as of the 1st of April 2016 by the 31st of March 2017. In respect of operational efficiencies, we've identified as a key project the appointment of a panel of external investigators, editors and report writing support, as well as legal advisors and law firms and special advisors that will assist us in the work that we undertake as an institution. The next key project relates to the first phase, really, of our electronic case management system, and we want to at least implement the registration module. And the next key strategic objective that we've identified is that internally we're geared to turn around times in our investigations. We apologize for the typo there. We want to investigate and finalize all cases relating to the Executive Members Ethics Act and the Code and other involved investigations that the Public Protector has already spoken to. We also want to look at the promotion of good governance. Here what is key is that we want to finalize all existing systemic investigations that we are currently undertaking, as well as systemic interventions. And the total budget that we've allocated to our core is 159.6 million. And the last program is stakeholder management. One of the strategic objectives there is ease of access to services by all persons and communities. And the Public Protector has indicated that one of the key projects is the mobile clinics. We are planning to have 648 clinics nationally, including in province, that is throughout the country. The other key strategic objective there is ethical leadership. We are going to have as one of our key projects the Good Governance Week and Conference, 9 stakeholder forums with other oversight bodies and organs of state, and we've already indicated that we want to look at operational efficiencies as well, and we are looking as one of our projects for international benchmarking visits to assist us in being efficient internally in terms of our processes and systems. And what we've allocated there is an amount of 4,092,000 for the current financial year. I will go next to the slide that speaks to our existing budget allocation. The Public Protector has indicated that we are tabling a budget for approval by the National Assembly of 263.3 million. What you see there shaded in blue is an amount of 262.6. But what brings it to 263.3 is the interest that we are going to get in terms of the transfer. The next slide, Chairperson and Honourable Members, it's just a repetition of what we've already spoken to, and the members can just note it. In terms of slide 28, just to go through quickly, current payment, which is the budget that we've already spoken to, which is 263.313 million, and part of that, 201,000,095, goes to compensation of employees. Goods and services, we've allocated an amount of 54,767,000. The next slide is just the detailed breakdown of where this 263 million goes. Without boring members with the details, I am proposing that members can just note where the money goes to in terms of the nitty-gritties and the details. In terms of the budget priorities that we've identified for us, for ourselves, if you look at the percentage there, the first bullet, our investigations, they take approximately 61% of our budget. That speaks to also funding of our service points, which is 1 national office, 9 provincial offices, and 9 regional offices. we apologize for the time, for the, it's now 9, and also funding of our stakeholder engagement programs. We also want to give the House an indication of what goes to our provinces. For the Western Cape, the total budget that is allocated is 12.1 million. Of that 12.1 million, as you can see, 10.7 goes to compensation of employees, 1.4 goes to goods and services. Next is Eastern Cape with a total budget of 12.4 million, of which 1.3 goes to goods and services, and 11,079,000 goes to compensation of employees, followed there by KZN with a budget of 12.9 million, of which 1.5 goes to goods and services, and 11.3 goes to compensation of employees. And in Mpumalanga, it's 9.9 overall, with goods and services taking 1.3 and compensation of employees 8.6. Northwest has a budget of 16.8, of which 1.7 goes to goods and services, 15.1 goes to compensation of employees. Free State takes 11.7, of which 1.375 goes to goods and services, and 10.3 goes to compensation of employees. Gauteng is 3.3, and of that, goods and services takes 1.4, and compensation of employees 11.8. Limpopo is 13.5, of which 1.6 goes to goods and services, and compensation of employees takes 11.9. And the last one is the Northern Cape, which takes 12.8, and 1.3 of that goes to goods and services, and 11.4 goes to compensation of employees. Overall, the allocation to our provinces then comes to 115.8 million. The next slide is just a repetition of what we've already alluded to. So I will not repeat it, it can just be noted. So it's the next slide. Slide 36 is just the breakdown as well of what goes where, and it can be noted by the committee. In terms of our budget priorities, no, it's also a repetition. We can skip that one. The last part of my presentation, committee members and chairperson, relates to our organizational structure. We've made a copy available. Perhaps just to indicate that the changes to the structure is the rationale behind the changes is in order for us to provide optimal service and also to promote internal efficiencies and so on. But perhaps just to draw the members to page 7 in terms of one of the key new positions that we are proposing. Sorry. We want to have special investigators who are going to deal with the executive members and members ethics matters, and we've identified 6 positions for this, and they are still unfunded. That's one of the key changes in the structure. The second one, committee members will find on page 8 of the organogram, which is the introduction of an investigator general who will then be responsible for overseeing all our investigations. That includes investigations that are carried out at national, as well as those that will be carried out in provinces. So the rationale here is that we want to have a central point from which all our investigations will be monitored and managed. Thank you, Chairperson. I will hand over to the DPP.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ndo, and to the Public Protector. Likewise, let me acknowledge the Chair, Honorable Dr. Mosefa, and Honorable Members, and obviously the long-standing Secretary, Mr. Romano, who's always an unsung hero. I'll speak to the delivery challenges. You see that slide number, under heading number 8, key delivery challenges that we currently experiencing. The first being human resources. Of the approved structure that Mr. Ndo just spoke about, only 59% is funded. And of course, that means that out of the 556 approved posts in the structure, only 329 are funded. And you'll have seen quite a lot going around about the trainee investigator program, and it's unable to proceed as originally conceived. And we have graduated, for lack of a better word, the trainees into 39 assistant investigators who are currently being paid with no budget allocated to them. And then there's the electronic case management system, which requires approximately 50 million rand, and that's something that we would certainly want to see request funding for in the future, because it certainly improves efficiency, and we have happier complainants. We have explored, in line with the Constitutional Court, public protector trusts, which would assist us with non-core business. Remember, the Constitutional Court has a trust which helps fund the clerks that clerk in the court and so forth. And of course, we are hoping that we can get advice and input on that particular initiative going ahead. We have written to the Minister of Finance, Mr. Pravin Gordhan, also for his input and advice on how to proceed with regard to having an ethical trust in line and as accepted by the public service. And then we've seen an increase in the number of reviews without consultation since the Supreme Court of Appeal judgment, which clarified the powers of the public protector last year. We currently have 18 cases on hand, and the likelihood is actually very high that the cases will go up after last week's decision in the Constitutional Court. Because remember, Chief Justice Mukwege said, if people don't agree with the remedial action, then we'll take it to court. So we probably will see that being the trend going ahead. And of course, the case backlog of critical complex cases, which require a lot of forensics, and the struggle to balance the rigor and promptitude. I can give an example. I mean, there's the Mandela funeral case, which needs quite a lot of resources to do efficiently. And then there's, we also want to note that organizational footprint is on hold. I'll also speak to the emerging risks that we currently face. Now, the first risk is operational sustainability. Now, if I'm to describe the risk there, financial constraints that impact negatively on operations and our ability to fully discharge our mandate. And a mitigation strategy is to explore alternative funding. And I said, in line with Treasury-approved guidelines and so forth, for example, GIZ helped us look at our case management system, and this was through and via treasury. And this will be to fund non-core projects, non-core business. Again, also the issue of the risk baseline funding has not increased, and a mitigation strategy would be continuous engagement with government and certainly parliament for improved funding. And the third strategy would be to continue cost-saving initiatives. The next risk is reputational risk. Poor systems and processes have impacted on our ability to execute mandates effectively. And when we travel, we see that a lot of our partners internationally are light years ahead in terms of being advanced. And a mitigation strategy is business process reengineering. The next one is reputational damage. And here, inability to finalize investigations with the required speed and within our set turnaround times. I alluded to one that didn't move as quickly. I'll give an example, public protector of the post office, which took us quite a long time as well. And the mitigation strategy here would be to approach the National Treasury to increase the baseline budget to fund additional permanent investigators, and then, of course, enhance quality assurance processes. The next risk would be litigation. As I alluded to earlier on, though, there's a significant chance that there will be increased legal reviews, a state organ taking the public protected court, resulting in increased financial burden. And a mitigation strategy here is to appoint a panel of legal experts and, of course, explore alternative legal support. And then the next one, which is it is the last one actually, is limited access. You remember the Constitution enjoins us to be accessible to all persons and communities. So lack of physical access to the Office of the Public Protector, particularly for rural communities, who we call our Hobart Amini, capacity constraints limiting prompt attendance to all cases, resulting in constrained access. And people get very upset. I'm sure some of them have approached this committee to say our matter is not moving. So a mitigation strategy would be a comprehensive outreach and a stakeholder program developed and then, of course, implemented and have our caseload model completed. By way of closing remarks, as to what we would like to happen, we are playing our part in redressing administrative wrongs, ensuring public accountability and good governance and support of constitutional democracy. Now, what we are asking from Parliament is to approve the budget as presented, which is the 263,313,000. Let's see, I think if you can go to the but also, if I'm to refer to scenario two, which is our wish list. As I said, we're asking you to approve the budget as presented in organizational structure. But scenario two, which represents a shortfall between operational needs and the allocation, would then be that 30,631,220. Right? And to continue that scenario two, that realistic budget excludes the following, which actually can increase the deficit, which is funding of additional regional offices, which is approximately 20 million, the case management system and security, which is approximately 54 million, and increased capacity, especially intern and trainee investigations, interns at 50 and training investigators about 100, which is approximately 11 million. So that comes up to a total roughly of about 115,630,000. And of course, we urge Treasury, if we go back to the closing remarks, Ms. Fatima, we urge Treasury to provide requested additional funding at least for the post approved in 2010 in terms of the structure. And of course, provide guidance and support the Public Protector Trust Initiative, which is modeled along the lines of the Constitutional Court. And of course, a very important one, honorable members, because we have thousands of cases around the country where people want remedial action and justice at the bare minimum is to join hands with us and to actually ensure that remedial action as envisaged in Section 1821C of the Constitution is implemented without undue delay. So, and of course, we, by way of concluding remarks, we also want to reiterate what Chief Justice Mokoeng last week when he said that within the context of breathing life into the remedial powers of the public protector, she or he must have the resources and capacity necessary to effectively execute her mandate so that she can indeed strengthen our constitutional democracy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Before you take over, sir, I just wanted to clarify before members ask questions the issue of a deficit. We have cleared the budget deficit, so there is no budget deficit. It was our CFO using financial language to try and explain the additional money we need. So what we've done here, we've given you a budget, Honourable Chairperson and members, based on what has been allocated. But that's not negotiable. That's the money that has already been allocated by Treasury, and we're asking you to approve that. On that budget, we have no deficit. The deficit we had last year, we've cleared it because we made savings this year. We're then saying, though, for optimal service delivery, there are these other things we need. For example, the ICT, our electronic case management system, which was impaired in 2012, we've never been able to get funding for it. So from the 263 million, we are going to pay 6 million for it. That's why, based on the cloth we've been given, our suit is such that we will then implement incrementally. So we're putting 6 million into it for this year. But we're saying then if we were to get extra money through you supporting us as we engage Treasury, we would be able to implement that system immediately. I just wanted to clarify that so that there's no question, do we still have a deficit or do we not? We do not have a deficit. Thank you. Seconded.
Also, the public protector trust modeled along the Concord Trust. I haven't heard also about the Concord Trust. And also, maybe if you could tell us a little bit more, what progress has been made with the in the Forum for Institutions Supporting Democracy, which was supposed to deal with the duplication of mandates.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Just quick answers on the 648 clinics. You will recall, Honourable Members, last year that we put a hold on the approved footprint, which was about using the same model that the Department of Justice uses to bring courts closer to villages and townships. And they're doing that, for example, with small game courts. They bring them closer to villages and townships. So we had a footprint similar to that. But because of lack of funding, we have suspended that program that tries to bring our services as close as possible to the Gogo Dlaminis of the country. But to make sure then that they're not left high and dry, we've expanded the program that was instituted many years ago. Is called Mobile Clinic, so it's better than outreach. It's a mobile service where the investigators don't go there just to inform people about the services of the public protector and to complain, to collect complaints. They also resolve some of those complaints who are there. It's more like a mobile clinic in hospitals, or more like a circuit court in the court system. The Public Protector Trust is our solution to mobilizing direct funding from the public. we were given this idea from the member of the public, because the public has been asking us to go towards crowdfunding, and we had intended to approach the Minister of Finance for guidance on the hazards and ethics of crowdfunding. In the process, a member of the public then recommended to us, why don't we do something similar to the Constitutional Court? The Constitutional Court has something called the Constitutional Court Trust. So it mobilizes public funding. For example, some of the clerks are paid for the art in the Constitutional Court, etc. In that regard, then, we have written to the Minister of Finance asking him to note that we've made this decision to establish the Public Protector Trust, requesting him to authorize the establishment of a separate account for the trust, requesting him to advise on the ethics of getting funding from the public, because it's not as easy as that. And lastly, to provide whatever guidance he could provide. The letter was also replicated to the Speaker of the National Assembly. I think 2 days ago, I sent the letter to the Speaker of the National Assembly, just alerting her to the fact that we have decided to establish this trust. The Deputy Secretary of Public Protector took pains to explain, honourable members, that the trust is not going to fund core business, it will fund investigation, but it will fund infrastructure, and it will fund also our training program. Because we had a training program that was commended by the Minister of Education, of Higher Education, the Honourable Blade Nzimande, because we took 100 young people and we intended to replicate that program every year. So they were supposed to be given jobs for 2 years, trained as investigators, and they've been flying like hotcakes. But it was then every 2 years we would take a new batch. Now, firstly, we're not even able to have 100 of these ones now as assistant investigators. We have 36, because to be able to keep them permanently, we have to then forego increasing the group so that the little money that we have can only pay for the 39. And then we were supposed to take another batch of 100, and we're not able. I think this year we're going to take about 30, but if the trust takes off, we'll be able to go back to having 100 trainee investigators properly trained. But we also want to formalize training, honorable members. The Public Protector provides professional services. Up until now, we don't have a professional training unit because we were in an office of the Public Protector in the Department of Justice. And therefore, the training needs were provided for. And we don't have a training component, so the trust is also going to assist us with that, professionalizing training for the group. We do train every year, but we just want to professionalize it. And then a progress that has been made in the IFD institution, I'm going to ask the Deputy Public Protector, who is our representative most of the time in the forum, particularly in regards to strengthening synergies, that project about strengthening synergies in the work of the office. But just to say for me, in terms of the funding, we've adopted a model you'll see in the strategy where we're asking Parliament, instead of increasing the structure, we're just saying, let's keep the structure that was approved in 2010, which has never been funded fully, and we've augmented it just very cosmetically. But what we are going to be asking Parliament is, fund us as you do with the rest of the state, fund us on a case-by-case basis, like the Commission of Inquiry. When we have a complex case, those cases need a minimum of 5 people. If we could then be funded on a case-by-case basis, that would relieve the question of should the structure increase or should the structure not increase. But then the work will be done. David Papateka, will you please address the chair?
Maybe you could just take that opportunity to also clarify the difference between provincial and regional offices, because in each province you have more than 3 to 5 regions. So what would the regional structure?
Okay, Honourable Chair, I will give the issue of the provincial issue a bash. Mr. Ndo in his day job, you remember his acting CEO, he's actually current executive manager of Regional Investigations and Integration. So, but, and I'll ask him to actually clarify more and more. For example, where we have Bloemfontein chair, we have Puta Tshaba, where we have Mafikeng, we've got you know, your Klerksdorp and your Rustenburg offices, and now we have, for example, Kimberley, we've got Upington. Here in the Western Cape, we have Cape Town, we have George. It's an access issue because sometimes the distances are far too great for people to travel. Whether in a tower, we still have a challenge where, for example, people still have to take taxis from Ulundi to Durban and so forth. So it's really an access issue to ensure that especially the more marginalized communities are able to access the offices. So they all can go to the bigger centers. And we certainly would want to see our footprint increasing to as many as possible. Yes, for example, we've got Bisho, we've got Mthatha. The Eastern Cape, the PE area is not, Mutinate areas are not covered. But back to the FISD, Chair and Honourable Members, we participate actively in the Forum for Institutions supporting Democracy, and we have quite an interface with the Speaker's Office as well. And currently, the forum is chaired by the chair of the FFC, Financial and Fiscal Commission, Mr. Bohani Khumalo. And to answer your question, Chair, as to how are we managing the overlaps and so forth, we currently are chairing a working group chaired by ourselves, as Public Protector, on complaints management. And we were supported in this by the Public Service Commission. For example, we've sought to create a joint call center, and this is being looked at by the Commission for Gender Equality. The referral system is being looked at by the South African Human Rights Commission, and also forum shopping, which is also being looked at by the South African Human Rights Commission. And then there's, of course, the sharing of resources, which is being looked at by us. But generally, on a day-to-day basis, we exchange things. We basically, for example, someone who approached the Public Service Commission, the Public Service Commission said, no, but this is not actually ours. Go to the Public Protector, go to the Human Rights Commission, and so forth. So there's that healthy interface which we are guarding quite jealously to ensure that it happens and that we are in partnership in this. And I think the Speaker has also come in a few times to meet us. I know there's that other issue where there was the Kada Akma report concerning some of the other Chapter 9, such as CGE, CRL, and so forth, which we obviously attended as an observer, but it was, and we're meeting later this month again to prepare papers for tabling to the forum, especially on this particular issue of handling complaints and referring them amongst each other. So that's basically my update in that regard.
Perhaps, Honourable Chairperson, to just cut the long story short about the regional and thing, we have a three-tier structure in terms of offices. We have national office, and we have 9 provincial offices, and in each province we have regional offices. The approved footprint was requiring an office, a regional office in every district, but we've not been able to do that. And as you remember, between last year and this year, we've closed down some of those regional offices so that we can regionalize our budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Public Protector and colleagues, for the presentation. I will now take names of the members that want to participate. The first name was that of Honorable Shizambo. Honorable Swartz, Honorable Hon, Honorable Bongo, Honorable Maida, Honorable Mutapo, Honorable Mulwan and Honorable Honorable Shibambu. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I kept on raising my hand because I was worried that he almost developed a dialogue between you and the Office of the Public Protector when we're supposed to handle the format more differently. But also, we have a bilateral engagement with the Chief Whip of the Majority Party at 12 o'clock, so we'll have to, at some stage, proceed to have that engagement. Now, thanks. I want to first congratulate the Public Protector for the Constitutional Court's judgment on the case of the Economic Freedom Fighters versus the Speaker of the National Assembly and others. I think that the approach that was taken by the Public Protector's Office was a principled one and consistent and persistent, despite insults and undermining of your office joining of the case. I think that is one thing which, as South Africa, the people of South Africa should appreciate, because it preserves our constitutions and our values in terms of what we should do. And one thing which most people do not appreciate is that that judgment and your posture is about the future. Most of these people whose judgment has been passed against are not going to be there naturally in the next 30, 40 years. Ourselves are going to be there, and we'll be leading this country. We need a precedent that is based on sound constitutional principles. And that is the most important thing. So on behalf of the people of South Africa, I want to say thank you, Public Protector, for such. Because you are here, and I know that there were some issues that arose in the debate of the impeachment of the President of the Republic. There were the Deputy Minister of Justice and one of the members who sat in the ad hoc committee, Ankanda, who were
the point of order. I thought we were dealing with the budget and the issues raised by the Public Protector. And I think that now we are listening to political speeches and debate. And I think that we need some kind of clarification from the Public Protector and so that we can make go forward. I mean,
not that input. Maybe it's nothing to say on the substance. That's all that he wants to deal with. And maybe what we can agree with is that we'll have to observe some limitations of time so that everybody gets an opportunity to make an issue.
Yeah, throughout the Public Protector's appearance in this committee, we have dealt with both the budgetary issues, the mechanical issues, and the other political questions, including maybe you're not there in the last meeting. I can forgive you for that. Even in the last meeting, when there was an issue about her perspective on the judgment of the Western Cape High Court, and
I've allowed you to proceed.
Oh, that's fine. Let's deal with it. Now, I wanted to clarify that aspect. I was still saying that the Deputy Minister of Justice said that the Public Protector's affidavit was showing some signs of confusion in terms of the powers of the Public Protector. That is part of the reason why there is a general misunderstanding of whether the remedial action had to be complied with by the President. Can you please provide clarity with regards to some of the sentiments that were expressed today in the debate? Because it looks like the ruling party is operating under an illusion that the Public Protector was confused about their powers, and that is part of the justification why the President violated the Constitution. Thirdly, there is a second last point here. It's What is your advice to is when a person is found to have failed to abide, to uphold and respect the constitution, does that amount to violation of the constitution?
I think the honourable member is out of order. The matters that are raising are issues that do not relate to the subject matter for us today. But over and above that, he wants the public to comment about issues that have happened in the House, and that may spark a political debate in the committee, and that may deviate the work that we are here for. We are here for the strategic planning of the office and the budgetary issues. Issues that relate to opinions on what might have happened in court or issues related to that are not relevant for the session that we are in today. Thank you.
Before you arrive, questions arose regarding the Concord judgment. And we agreed that there's no single political party in this parliament that is challenging that judgment. And even the ruling party has undertaken to implement all that emerged from that judgment. So there's no need to ask the public protector to be commenting on anything from there, because all political parties accept the judgment. But more importantly, this forum is not meant for that. There's a specific reason why we're here, and because there are very important recommendations that the Office of Public Protector is making, and we want this committee to have sufficient time to address their recommendations. Otherwise, we're going to run out of time, and then they will get nothing out of this committee, because it will not have entertained their recommendations. So can you bear with us and say there are many other forums in this institution to deal with those issues, but for today, let's focus on the business of the committee. I sustain the
chairperson, you must avoid the temptation of trying to put your words in my mouth. I'm speaking here. With whatever right to speak, I have never said anything which is unparliamentary. We can ask the public, you have been doing that. When the public protector criticized the judgment of the Western Cape High Court, I was in that committee, you were speaking against that substantially, and she was here to present the budget in terms of the review. So you must be consistent. Don't want to tell me what I must say and how I must say it. And that is a principal issue that must be allowed to speak on every issue here. And if the public protector is comfortable to answer, she will answer. If she doesn't want to answer, she doesn't have to answer that.
Honorable Shibamba, with due respect, let's play the game according to the rules. There's no single party that is opposed to the Concord judgment. So we can't use this forum to discuss the Concord.
It's not true that there's no party which is not opposed to judgment, because part of the misinterpretations that have been happening in this parliament with specifically relating to what the public protector said and what the functions are. It's on record. And that is what we want the public protector to clarify. And there's nothing wrong with that. And that is the last point which we are dealing with in terms of how we're going to... Let me now move to the last point in terms of how we're going to move forward. It's very difficult to defend wrong things, Chairperson. You're part of that committee, you get caused confusion. The last issue which I want to speak to... is the funding?
The point is that we need to proceed with this meeting with respect for each other. Honorable Motseha is the chairperson of the committee. In the manner in which we are addressing, we need to address him with respect. And I guess the same thing should go to the public protector, and the same thing should go to all other members in the committee. Otherwise, we're not going to manage to proceed with our meeting. You also, as a chairperson, need to be protected as much as you protect all of us.
Thank you very much. Honorable member, we are dealing with
and important issues from the Office of Public Protector, I want this meeting to pay due attention to the issues raised there. So I want to appeal to you that the other policies are important, but they are not for today. There are other forums in this institution. Let's address the report of the public protector so that we give it due attention. Honorable Shibabu.
The last point I wanted to speak to is the question on the funding model of the public protector's office. The Chief Justice is correct in the judgment to say that the public protector's office must be given more resources and capacity to effectively execute the mandate in order to strengthen constitutional democracy. I think that we might possibly need as the committee on justice that deals with that issue, perhaps a far much more, possibly even involving the Standing Committee on Finance, which I sit in as well, to deal much more substantially with the funding model of the Public Protector's Office, the trust, and what else can be done. I think that there must be a far much more substantial submission so that we have an office that is able to deal with all the issues that is brought, because under normal circumstances, if the Public Protector's Office is the protection of the poor, as is said in the Constitutional Court's judgment, it normally should be existing in all the districts, even beyond districts, it should be existing even at the sub-district level, so that it's accessible to as many South Africans as possible who do not have access to an otherwise a costly litigation process. That is one of the issues that we wanted to deal with. And then lastly, is can we please be given clarity if the Office of the Public Protector has received complaint and is investigating the corrupt Gupta family which has captured the political party and runs it like a sponsorship.
I'm not sure if one considers that the public protector's term of office comes to an end. Could this be the last meeting that Advocate Modantele attends? It could also be a meeting in October, but from our side, we just want to thank you sincerely for the work that you have performed. I want to just touch on the obvious constraint, and that is the funding model and the request for additional funding, which we from our side most definitely do support. And I would urge a committee to, as we engage in this issue, to bear in mind our powers as the Justice Committee in terms of the Money Bills Amendment Act, that we can approach the Finance and Appropriations Committee. The power lies with us as Parliament to apply and to request additional funding. So I would strongly urge us to do that, particularly in view of what we've heard this morning and following the Constitutional Court's judgment, which the court has said she must have the resources and capacity that the public protector necessary to effectively execute her mandate so that she can indeed strengthen our constitutional democracy. So it is incumbent upon us, and I'm sure we all agree we accept that judgment here. The court has said, in the context of breathing life into the remedial powers, additional resources are required. So, Chair, let us seriously consider the request for additional funding, particularly in view of the fact now that the Deputy Public Protector indicated that there are 18 cases on hand of review applications being brought against the Public Protector. Now, if you bear in mind that where review applications are brought by departments, those departments are funded by the taxpayer. Surely, the taxpayer should be able to fund the public protector in defending her decisions where her findings are taken on review. So I would strongly ask that we consider that and possibly the public protector or the deputy chief public protector could give us an indication of the costs, anticipated legal costs, in having to defend each one of these review applications now. That is the first issue. Secondly, my colleague has referred to the funding model, and say we should look seriously at a separate funding model. I fully support him on that. If the Special Investigating Unit has got a funding model where they are asked to investigate a department, that department pays partially towards their costs, then why should the Public Protector not have a similar funding model, which would obviously cause there need to be a legislative amendment to her powers, but there is already talk in the documentation about amendments to the Public Protectors Act. So that is something that we could consider. I would lastly ask the Public Protector to comment on the Forum for Institutions Supporting Democracy and to what degree that forum, which is situated in the Speaker's office, is assisting you with the compliance of your reports that have requested remedial actions, and your previous presentation, I think when the Deputy Public Protector was here, indicated that there's been a lack of compliance. So to what degree is that forum assisting you? And if it is not assisting you, then it is incumbent upon us as the Justice Committee to assist you to ensure that your remedial actions are complied with by government departments. Thank you, Chairperson.
We have to increase monies for the departments
The departments already will be doing their funding. They already are being funded by the taxpayers to take the public protector's decisions on review. What we are saying is unfair then that the public protector does not have sufficient funding from the taxpayer, which is from National Treasury, to meet those review applications.
Now,
thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Horn.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, first of all, let me just say they say a year is indeed a very long time in politics. It's quite interesting that this time last year the opposition was pleading that we should deal with the budget of the public protector, and the ruling party insisted that we should deal with all other issues of oversight, and today it's just the other way around. But be that as it may, I will stick to the rules. My first question is also in respect of the Forum Supporting Democracy. And earlier this week when we had the Minister here for his public oversight, he indeed indicated that this forum, especially in respect of the public protector, sort of grinded to a halt, a type of a Mexican standoff, while there was, in his view, uncertainty as to the remedial action of the public protector. So it is quite obvious from his answer that there indeed has been strained relations. So I would like to ask the public protector whether there has been any movement towards normalization of her relationship with the ministry under which she falls. Then secondly, Chair, going to the budget then, I have a few issues to raise. The first is that last year the public protector's three-year budget and APP envisaged a reduction in the cost of consultants from 3.5 million to 900,000 in the two outer years, which we are now in the first of those. But now we again see a rise in the estimated cost of consultants to 8.95 and 9.5 million. And I think it's quite clear that if not carefully managed, and in the vast majority of cases, the costs of consultants are not always the best value for money. So I would like some comment as to, first of all, why the budget has increased in that respect and how it will be managed to see to that we get value for money as taxpayers. Then in terms of the funding model, I would like to get some feedback, Chair. There was a target for Dr. Du Toit, who's not here today. I don't know whether she's still with the public protector, to have at least sourced funding through two donors by the end of March this year. and talking about her absence, let me turn to the target of a clean audit for this year, and I would like to get some comments whether that is still achievable, given also certain comments made during the presentation in respect of the ICT, the comment that only 6 million of the needed 50 million to improve ICT systems can be spent in the upcoming year. And we all know that the ICT issues has been one of the big issues raised by the AG also. Similarly, with supply chain management, which was one of the reasons why the public protector did not get an unqualified audit in the past, along with irregular expenditure, we would like to get some comments whether those offices have been duly capacitated and whether the AG's findings have been addressed. Then, Chair, also, there's two in the APP. There was last year a target to set up a panel of what was called a legal experts. Just some clarity as to whether there's remuneration involved for these legal experts. I know there's an interim panel now, and whether they do it on a pro bono basis. And for this year, there is the target of setting up another panel now of investigators, editors, report writers, and special advisors. So we'd like to get some info as to the role and the costs regarding that as well. Then, Chair, two more questions. I find it a bit strange in terms of the provincial offices that, first of all, Northwest, which is not in any means either geographically or by way of population, has by far the biggest budget. And if you look at the organogram, it doesn't seem as if the staff complement there is much bigger than in other provinces. So I would like to get some reasons why that is the case. But then secondly also, Chair, we all know that South Africa and our 9 provinces differ vastly. And while one have a good understanding that in the geographically big provinces you would need when you want to establish your footprint everywhere, you need regional and mobile offices and so on. But to my mind, it is a very simplistic way about going about your budget to more or less capacitate all of your provincial offices in the same way. Because obviously the KZNs and Gautengs and Western Cape of this world must have more Gogo Vlaminis than Northern Cape, even if you take into account the geographical spread of people in the Northern Cape. And then lastly, Chair, yes, I want to, if the Honourable Shivambu maybe did not follow the news, I can confirm that the DA indeed has asked the public protector to investigate the issue of the Guptas and state capture. I don't know about party capture. The question I want to ask is, I see that there has been a visit in respect of international benchmarking to Singapore, which we know has had a fairly effective fight against corruption over the last years. So I want to know, in respect of the complexities of a case like an investigation into possible state capture, what has been learned in Singapore, also in respect of possible alternative funding models. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The question about Northwest and the demographics, I think Honorable One has copied from my notes. Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Well, let me start by appreciating the presentation. Public process, the well-prepared presentation. My first question will be, I think last year we introduced to a CEO, and today it is said that there is an acting one. What might have happened to the CEO was appointed recently. But secondly, Chair, is that page 4, I think it's a matter that you also raised very sharply yesterday about the values. I see the values there are listed, all of them, but Ubuntu is also listed as a value. I think I agree with you that from where I'm sitting,
Ubuntu is a cornerstone of all the values. You will explain it in terms of the what would be in Afrikaans and in the other language that you said. So I think Ubuntu is covering almost everything. So it should be at the center of all other gatherings. And then with regards to the issue, you'll note that the AG has raised a lot of red flags in terms of the operation in the public protector's office. And part of the recommendation of the AG was that there must be a financial action plan to get out of those red that the AG has produced as the report. So I want to know how far we, because issues that relate to the issue of funding in the main, the issue of funding is related to many other issues. It shouldn't be just a funding that is just a blanket funding that must come. The funding is also related to what we had requested in the third quarter, that what is the backlog? What is the exact backlog? Because in the third quarter we're told that 679,996 cases were a backlog, 1,244 were still outstanding, and so on and so forth. But this issue of what is the backlog, I think it's a matter that is also related to this funding. So that us and when we look at funding, we'll also show what is the backlog. But over and above that, the related matter would be the issue of overlaps. The extent to the relationship between public projects, SIU, other Chapter 9 institutions, because you find that one matter is being investigated by over five to or so institutions, and that is putting a constraint in the fiscus of the treasurer. So I think those are the issues that are also a cornerstone of this issue around the funding. Because once you get that very clear, we'll know the extent to which we must fund. Because you'll note from the report itself that funding has been increasing incrementally for the public project. So we've got to do those balance and checks around that matter. And then the issue of legislation, I think we must be abreast the extent to which we want to change legislation, because from where I'm sitting, the constitutional court decision itself does not impact on the issue of really changing the legislation to that extent. And the issue of legislation change is also related to the structure that we are requested to approve. Because from where I'm sitting, we're supposed to see the previous structure, compare it with the one that is proposed, so that we can be able to compare and check the extent to which we can deal with the structure. But also in view of the fact that later in the year we'll be appointing a new public project, I think we may have to do checks and balance there, whether we can't stop, because a new person may have a new way of operating and configuration of a structure, so that we don't take decision now. Later on in the year, somebody else come and say, this is how I think the office must be steered going forward. And one other related issue to this funding is the whole issue of the Kader Asmal report. But this Chapter 9 institution must be configured. I'm fully aware that the Public Protector's Office, in terms of that report, has not been mentioned. But it has an impact on the funding, because if others are being configured and brought together, you would be able to check whether you can take more money and give it to the public project. So the extent to which they are also interacting with you, with the report. I'm also interested on the view of Treasury on this trust. If you, if I may catch the view of Treasury. And one other matter, Chair, will be the issue of consultants and the money that is being paid to consult. It appears to be also a lot of money. What are the constraints in that area so that we are able to, the Minister of Finance said we must be able to do more with less. So we are paying a lot of consultants. On the other hand, you say we want more money. What is the constraint in terms of the internal capacity, and where must we intervene? I think, Chair, for now I'll stop. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chair, and thanks, Public Prosecutor and the team for the presentation. Chair, let me start by saying the outcome of the Concord decision was actually very welcome because it closed many uncertainties. So we are sure where we are going as a country going forward. And we are grateful for that. On the issue of consultants, just mentioned by other honorable members, the projections were such that the Office of the Public Protector would see to the reduction in the use of consultants. But instead, there is an increase. So I was just saying, if it's a lack of will on the part of the office, or are there maybe other sectors, do we need to be worried by those sectors? The office adopted a clean audit strategy. So I wanted to check, because if maybe where we are now, we'll be able to achieve that. And if not, what could be the reasons? I heard you, Public Protector, citing the issue of the increasing number of ombuds-like institutions. And I would presume those would be in the public sector. But where I'm standing, Gogo Dlamini is also a victim of the private sector. I know it might not be your competency, but given your experience, I would like you to advise the county how we could be able to ensure that the private sector does not go away with matter. So that, because the reason why I'm saying this, look at the insurance sector. The ombuds in the insurance sector are actually employed by the insurance industry. So you actually check where lies their allegiance, because they will obviously not be to the benefit of the beneficiaries, but to the benefit of their masters. Just one last thing, Chairperson. I would like to check with the Office of the Public Protector. That will the office be better placed to investigate the conduct of a member of the National Assembly? Remember, as members of the National Assembly, we gave affirmation to obedience to the Constitution. Will the office be better placed to investigate a member of the National Assembly who propagates the illegal occupation of land simply because he is not happy with Section 25 of the Constitution, the very Constitution which he has laid allegiance to. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And let me thank PP and your team for the presentation of the plan. And I'm happy, PP, that the deficit has been cleared. You remember last year when you appeared before the committee, the AG had reflected most of the presentation which you gave before the presented before the committee. So I'm happy that today at least you made it clear that the deficit has been cleared. And again, leading by after the presentation, the issue of leading by example and the issue of clean audit, which my colleagues have alluded to. So do you have any plans in place since last year to address this in order to achieve a clean audit for this financial year? And then I would also like to dwell much on the issue of accessibility, Chairperson. 72 mobile clinics per province, taking into consideration PP and your team, the economic situation, will that be feasible, practicable, financially? And again, we have more than 50 regions. So you also alluded to issue of regions. So as the Chairperson and other members have alluded to, please take that into consideration, taking into consideration the financial constraints, which you also alluded to in your presentation. And then in relation to ICT, the both PEG software tool mentioned elsewhere in the presentation, vis-a-vis the present one, may you kindly share light with us? And then the issue of consultants has been touched upon. Then there are three critical positions which I see. They are the acting CEO, acting, Honorable Bongo touched on it. And then the issue of acting senior manager, strategic support, issue of acting chief staff, why? Having such very critical positions, PP, in acting capacity, please. And then there is in your presentation, you make mention of outdated, obsolete cases. I can't recall which case it says on the slide. May you kindly share light with us, or under such circumstances, then what do you do with such cases? And why? Which criteria are you using in investigating cases? Because elsewhere you also made mention of cases having more than 2 years. Yes. So which criteria? Because sometimes we find that cases is being like the one which is being referred to by Honorable Horn here. I don't want to use the terminology she's using. The one of related to the Gupta. So there are cases which came before it. So which criteria are you using in investigating? And then may you also share, like, this PP or GCP is not legible enough. Can we have, because we are unable to, even during your presentation, the organizational structure, we couldn't get it clearly. So the issue of, you made mention of members, I couldn't get it clear. The special investigators, investigator general. I thought, is she saying inspector general of what? Investigator general, please share light. And can we have a legible document? Thank you so much.
Honourable Chair, I was wondering, I always like to bear with people. The Honourable Shivam really did ask to that. Yes, I'm addressing. I was saying the Honourable Shivam did request that you will be going out early. I was going to request that before I give my contribution, we allow the public protector to address these issues that have been addressed, then we continue. To greet everybody in the PP's office and congratulate them for the good work they're doing. In the I just wanted to, most of the questions I was asking were taken up by the ordinary CFA called before, you know. And to follow up. Oh, by the way, he's not around.
You are joking, and that was a special relationship with Mr. Horn.
It is my. He is not around. I'm sorry. I normally joke with him. Oh, he's there. Okay. Now, because he normally talks about what I was about to talk. I mean, maybe we think alike. I think he has crossed the floor. Can I find the explanation on the question of the income on pay? What do you call it? On the slide 16, you have other income, 126 last year and 150 this year and so on. Can you give some explanation as to perhaps do you have some donation from someone? What other income are you talking about? I mean, you have explained that you're talking about interest theft, could be a bank interest or something. Coupled with that, there is also the request you're talking about the trust. And the question there is, are you saying that anybody can donate to that? I have a problem. I do have a problem. As you know that money talks in this world, to get governments or agents or other agents are being influenced, because if I give you a billion rand, I would expect you to do as I would love you. I'm not sure if you don't compromise much of your independence, which I value very much. You need to explain. But I think last time I thought you would answer this question before was asked by the chairperson. Really, last time I did request that we need to be sure, because we've got so many Chapter 9 institutions that are doing basically almost the same thing. We requested you to talk to them, so that we know exactly, and everybody in the country would know exactly, for this particular thing, it is the PP. For this one, it is the human rights and so on. And there are quite a number of other organizations like ISU, SIU, and others, Hawks, what, that do investigations about corruption and other things. It is much easier because we human rights will come here this afternoon and ask for money. You are here, you ask for money. And we don't know, and if you have not yet made a demarcation, that is very clear. You know, it makes it easy. It makes it very easy. You want to go to every corner of South Africa, which is good. The human rights also wants to go to every corner of the world, which is also good. There's some kind of a competition. There's some kind of what exactly are you different from other institutions? Do you have only peculiar things to other investigators? That's the second question. The third one is related to what you said, which I quite appreciate. You said you were quoting the Constitutional Court Judge Mokoe Mokoe in Chief Justice in your documents. She's quite good, talking about also the importance that you should be funded and the remedial action. You would agree with me, wouldn't you, that the Constitutional Court actually came up with a thing that nobody before then, or at least before the Court of Appeal decision, had an idea about the binding effect of the remedial action. That even the public protester did not know, at least in April 2014. That nobody knew, and also there was a, you know, in other words, they have done a very good thing. They have clarified which were not clarified earlier. Even the High Court in Cape Town, which I think you know about the case, was also not sure. Now that we are cutting hands and say, now you know, you would agree with me on that, wouldn't you? Thirdly,
coordination of whatever, he doesn't know what he's saying, and he's making lots of very misleading and wrong statements. And then you still allow him to continue talking when he's just all over.
Order,
like that.
Order, sir. Order.
You must step down, and other people must do. The public protector must respond to what we're saying.
Order,
sir. Pure mediocrity of an old man like that.
Order, sir. Order, sir.
And in this meeting,
Because all of us said before that the reason why the constitutional court is because we say that the public protection powers are binding. And it says nobody here, and you leave him to speak like that.
Order.
We don't treat you like that.
In this meeting, no one has oversight over any member, and you leave that to the chair. And we have different ways of expressing ourselves, and we should respect one another.
Chair.
What is the order?
No, the order is on Honorable Floyd. The order is that Honorable Floyd is not used to attending this meeting. So he does not understand how the business of this committee operates. So he has no local standard to call an order on Honorable Mpumulwana.
To the issues raised by the report, I don't want party political squabbling in this meeting. Honorable Mpumulwana, finish.
Chairperson, can you proceed to business, please?
And please, it's not honorable for members of parliament to threaten each other with violence in a meeting of parliament. Honorable Mpumulwana, proceed.
Thank you. In your slide 50, I would like to understand that some kind of explanation on the 2 million of what is training.
The meeting and the people.
The training, the staff development. Are you training people to be investigators? What exactly are you training people to be administrators? What exactly is involved in the staff development and training in that? The other one, which I think has been said by my colleague, is the work of the consultants. There's a lot of money that's been called there. Do you employ lawyers to get other lawyers? Do you... Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to welcome the report of the Office of the Public Protector. Quite informative. Good to see the progress that has been made. I just want to say that you are the Public Protector of South Africa. You cannot allow your office to be patronized, lest it neutralizes the mandate of the Public Protector of South Africa. And also, don't be tempted to respond to any of the NA debates that you've actually been requested to comment on. So much was said in the debate, even to the extent that in the Office of the Public Protector, some of the children of the senior personnel in the Public Protector's office drove illegally state cars and crashed them. Don't go that way. Do not go that way. Sorry, Chairperson. I was just trying to emphasize that this is just not necessary. A debate of the National Assembly is a debate. We can never bring it to a portfolio committee and really find it right. So for now, we are focusing on the budget as presented by your office. And we want to actually continue also to congratulate you on the work that you're doing and to welcome the judgment of the Constitutional Court. For us, no matter whether people look at it as something that is negative for the ruling party, we see it as a celebration of constitutional democracy in South Africa. It doesn't happen anywhere in the world. It will be in a country like South Africa where you find something like this happening. And for that, we need to actually celebrate. I just want to go to the report that you've presented and also follow on what Honorable Maila has indicated about the ombudsman. You have indicated that in every industry you've got an ombudsman, which is good in terms of access to justice. And when you look at the strategic objectives that you have actually given, number 15 indicates that you intend also taking the idea of these ombudsmen into Africa. But I guess what he has expressed is very important in terms of the role that they play. And of course, maybe it's something that is outside your mandate, because when you start talking business in South Africa, it then actually goes out of your mandate. But at the same time, it still access to justice. And a lot of people in South Africa still depends on institutions of this nature. What would be important would be, even if you have not developed a mechanism of working with these ombudsman offices, my suggestion would be that you should actually develop that relationship. And that relationship would then allow your office to be in the position also to monitor what is happening in that area, which is very much important, just to protect the rights of South Africans. Your structure, I think it's, you have a general structure compared to other Chapter 9 institutions. I'm looking at all of these offices and I'm saying, oh, other Chapter 9 institutions must be looking at this with envy. Because generally the pattern is such that other Chapter 9s have got like head office and then it's provincial offices. But at the same time, I'm thinking through the Forum for Institutions Supporting Democracy, do you talk about how to assist each other maybe when it comes to like one stop service? And it's something that I think is a concept that was introduced previously. So that instead of one day Parliament, maybe even if it's not this committee, finds that other Chapter 9 institutions comes with the same model that needs to be funded, why not try and utilize what you've got, which of course we are actually saying maybe it needs to be reviewed so that it can probably be in line with the future vision should the new public sector come. But what you've got, how can we then have maximum benefit out of it? And I think it's something that needs to be looked at the level of the Forum for the Institution Supporting Democracy. And that would then also take care of the duplicating mandates, because this one thing that is contentious, to be in the position of South Africa to deal with duplicating mandates in a way that actually helps South Africa to really save costs. The idea of additional investigators, additional report writers, I think I will actually also follow on Honorable Horn's question of consultants. You know, for now, every government department, when they come to Parliament, what we do is to actually say no, no, no to consultants. And you say no, no to consultants with a history of consultants that have been used in government departments, and even in Chapter 9, where we have actually found that we have spent so much as a country. Because remember, the fiscus is there, but this fiscus is not like a river. There will be time when we cannot afford some of these things because of the manner in which we have actually utilized our finances. And of course, I hear the voice that says, these government departments, when somebody says, let's copy, and it might be a good idea to copy from the model of the SIU, of making government departments to pay. But at the same time, when we say the money that government departments have got is the money of the taxpayer, even the Chapter 9 institutions are funded by the taxpayer's money, so it's the money of the same country. Let's not fool ourselves to say maybe go to government departments and then therefore go use this taxpayer's money, almost giving an impression that the public protector is not using the taxpayer's money. All is about the taxpayers' money. But indeed, let's look at that model also to see to what extent it might be a model that might actually work for an establishment of the state. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chair, very, very briefly, and thank you for the indulgence. Chair, I think this is an issue that I omitted to raise, and I think it's an issue of national importance. And that is, I'd ask the public protector to comment on if the media reflected you correctly that you are being investigated by the Hawks for potential prosecution for holding the view that your powers are binding. Now, if that is so, that is totally unacceptable. And so I would just ask you to say if that is correct or not.
Don't lead her into temptation. Don't lead her. I think she has expressed herself in another forum. Let's leave that matter.
But, Chair, surely we have Parliament if that is the case. Let me just remind what happened when the SAP raided the Public Protector's office when she was doing the inspection on the...
On your point of order, Chair.
We called, but, Chair, we called... That we called the Public Protector to protect her. And surely we need to protect her. And that's the only reason why I'm raising this issue, Chair. So thank you for your indulgence, Chair.
I think that if she really is a problem, she can approach the Office of the Speaker to deal with that, but not in this forum. If she's delivering her into temptation. I think Public Protector, I'm happy that... you agree with the suggestion we made earlier. Maybe it was premature that they need to revisit the Public Protector as an amendment. And I think that is a matter of extreme urgency, because we don't want the next Public Protector to get into the situation that we have been dealing with. And maybe it would really be a good thing that a committee, this committee takes that responsibility so that all the political parties have a say in that process. But secondly, I'm just wondering whether donor funding through the trust would not create the perception that the rich are having undue influence on your office, because the go-go dummies will not be able to contribute. Another point is where you need a panel of experts. Have you not looked at the state attorney's office, whether or not you cannot tap into that capacity? The other issue, I wonder if Honorable Bongo raised the question of Ubuntu. I don't know whether from your side you haven't realized that most of the problems that we have result from moral degeneration. Our icon Nelson Mandela ensured that we launched the moral regeneration movement in 2002, because he said corruption, crime and corruption and various social issues in society arise from moral regeneration. Whether we should not also focus on the restoration of values throughout society, because if corruption is so rampant everywhere, it means the society itself is sick, so that we can't just focus on punishing the sick people. We need to do something to cure them. And that brings me to the question of restoration of the value of Ubuntu. That is not one of the values. The African speakers say it's Menschlichkeit. The Germans say is mentioned Würde, and this is our common humanity. And if you look at all the policy documents, they will say we want to build a united, democratic, non-racial, non-sexist, prosperous society in which the value of every citizen is measured by our common humanity. So shouldn't we be sparing some of the resources, really to focus on the type of society that we want and infuse the appropriate values that will ensure that that ideal society will not have this moral degeneration and rampant corruption. Lastly, the question of land. I think one likes the observation that your office is the voice of the poor. But I don't think that it is envisaged that we must have the poor forever. And it is common knowledge that land disposition in this country has produced the triple challenge of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. And those of us who are public representatives, we have lots of problems in the land transport, in the provincial land claims commission, and with the results that the land restitution program aimed at restoring, restituting land so that people must not be permanently poor, that people must change their faith in their own. Those structures are not working. The question is not high time that your office pays special attention to the question of land and the institutions that are charged with that responsibility. But I don't want this meeting to be used as a meeting to refer matters to your office. And that's why Honorable Horn and I think Honorable Maila, I don't think we should be asking the public protector which cases are on the way to her and that type of thing. There are other procedures for approaching your office and not through this committee. And I trust your judgment, answer what you think is relevant. And you know, politicians, we will come with all sorts of things. So we should not divert you from what you came here for. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you, Honorable Members, for the kind words and for the very detailed, comprehensive, and insightful feedback. Maybe I'll start with the Honorable Chairperson. Thank you for welcoming the request that we revisit the Park Protector Act. As we know that it's an old act, that it was initially drafted for the Ombudsman, for the Advocate General, and it kept being tweaked when it became the Ombudsman office in the Department of Justice, and then it came being tweaked when the public protector was appointed. And it has never been clarified. I think the Justice Portfolio Committee would be familiar with the concept by the South African Law Reform Commission that is called purification of statutes. The Ombudsman, the Audit General Act, the Audit Act was purified in 2006. That's an omnibus review of the Act to align it entirely with the Constitution. For example, we also speak about the Office of the Public Protector. And that's a relic of the past because it was an office within the Department of Justice. And some members talk about us being an entity of the Department of Justice, which was under apartheid. We are an entity under the Department of Justice. But in the new constitution, we are not an entity under the Department of Justice. The public protector is an executive authority in her own, in his or her own right. She has the power to perform executive actions, including the drafting and promulgation of her own rules, without which an entity under a department is not able to do. But I'm very grateful for that. That process, Honorable Chairperson, might not finish during my time, but the team will support the process. The South African Law Reform Commission would probably be the best because it is a purification of the structure. The Chief Justice didn't say the Act must be amended, but he did indicate that there's no clarity, for example, on what happens after the public protector has taken appropriate remedial action. Because in the Act, there's not even a mention of the word remedial action, because the Act initially was drafted when this office had two powers, Honorable Chairperson, the power to investigate and the power to take appropriate remedial action. And the power to investigate and the power to report. When Advocate Barkwa opened offices in 1995, the office still only had two powers, the power to investigate and the power to report. So the third power only came in 1996. But I think the courts, because you know how the courts work, is that they read things into the air. And I think how we've been able to function effectively is reading things. And the Constitutional Court did that so beautifully on the 31st. They didn't impair the Act, but they used the Act as it is to take into account the Constitution. But thank you again for that. Regarding donor funding, I would request, as you have said yourself, about certain things having a way to distract us. We discussed with our team that for today, we want to just indicate that we have decided to establish a trust. We've asked the minister, we've informed the Minister of Finance about this decision. As an executive authority, I'm entitled to do that, or whoever the public is entitled to do that. But we asked the Minister of Finance firstly to allow us to establish an account for the trust, but two, importantly, to advise on the ethics of this kind of institution. So the letter has been replicated to the Speaker of the National Assembly because we are aware of the ethics of establishing an office like this. We've been asked by the public about crowdfunding for years now. We didn't rush into it because, again, it's a minefield. You could get all sorts of people. You may be worried, for example, about people giving us money for their own purposes. We also worried about people who are not people of integrity, such as people who are violating the law, laundering their money into office. So there's a whole lot of things. But the Constitutional Court Trust is an institution, is a trust run by an institution that is independent and impartial. That's why when we finally found this model, we said, wow, here is something that is organized by an institution that has similar responsibilities about being impartial, independent, and subject only to the law and the Constitution. But we would welcome any ideas. I would just not want us to discuss it in this forum. Any ideas around how it could be done with integrity, and what it could fund and what it could not fund. We've indicated in the letter to the Minister of Finance what it should fund. Regarding donor funding is the easy one, or what we call development funding, is the easy one. Every Ogado State receives some of it, and we don't get it directly. It's given to Treasury, and Treasury channels it to us. So that one, the integrity relating to donor funding is managed by the government of South Africa. For example, the donor funding we've received, Honorable Chairperson, is part of the governance program given to the government of South Africa. They gave us a tiny slice of the money they're giving to the Department of Justice. So we got the money from GIZ, but from money given to the Department of Justice already. USAID also gives money to the government of South Africa. Then they just requested that this tiny slice should come to us. And all in all, it's about 5 million, I think, from the one, and I can't recall, I think the team will indicate. So, regarding the panel of experts, I just want to clarify to this House, Honorable Chairperson and members, is that we have not increased the use of consultants. We've virtually used no consultants in the past year. The only consultants we ever used was in 2012. That unfortunate matter that led to us looking like we can't manage procurement, because that was the one that was not managed according to the memo that was originally approved. So they were, the only consultants we've heard is those just finishing their work. And the money involved is negligible. What we are looking at is now consultants for this year. It's a new thing, and it's based on that backlog. Mr. Tede, if you can put the backlog, because if we do want to just clean up the backlog, you need a turnaround strategy to get rid of this thing and go. So we've looked at that. But secondly, a panel of consultants is not so much that we'll use them, honorable members, immediately. What we've done is put that panel so that we don't experienced the problem we experienced previously, where there were questions around how the procurement was done, whether we should have followed Section 3 of the Public Protector Act, or we should have procured in terms of the supply chain management policy in terms of Section 217 of the Constitution. We are avoiding that by making sure that we follow Section 217 anyway, regardless of my powers under Section 3 of the Public Protector Act, because that's what the Auditor General said. Once the panel is there, there's no, we're not compelled to use, but it just means that if you do use a member on the panel, you will do so lawfully. I'm just answering everyone who's concerned. But here's the backdrop, honourable members. Administrative justice and serving delivery, 13, but that might be misleading because one of them involves a one that we did on Millennium Development Goals. We issued an interim report on the Millennium Development Goals, but to issue a final report, there are piles and piles of files around the RPPC, and there's questions and questions. So it's a super systemic investigation. Good governance and integrity is where honourable members have spoken about what did we learn in Malaysia, in Singapore. When the team came back on Singapore, they were even more depressed than they left about how we're cheating them with resources. DGI, if you good governance and integrity, for post office we had one investigator. And it was called one investigation, but it was multiple investigations because the complaints, they were unrelated to each other. It was this one did this one did that, unrelated. If it was to a court of law, those would have been separate cases, and there were about 19. In Singapore, just one case. You get a team with forensic lawyers, forensic investigators, and then your ordinary investigators, your support team, etc. Because, honourable members, we need to avoid a situation whereby the public protector gives you a clean bill of health. And then it turns out that there was corruption, there was all sorts of things. And what we've done at the moment is that the team doesn't give people a clean bill of health, but what then suffers is promptitude. You've seen how we've tweaked our strategy to talk about really concretely finding a balance between promptitude and thoroughness without it. So 257 are cases older than a year. That's not the one. It's MK 21, Free State 2, Gauteng 162. And all of the ones that the team worked so hard, they cleared out the backlog, and I commend them. But the complex ones, it was difficult for the team to. That's where we're going to meet this team, honourable members. But we also, from the team, we also need experts. There's a case, for example, we couldn't conclude on nuclear radiation, exposure to nuclear energy. The Mpelinda matter. We went with full speed, everything was going well, until we just reached one problem. Were these people exposed to nuclear radiation? When we've gone for quotes out there, for people out there, they're saying that per person to test the person is going to cost us about 200 million, and we have about 300. We have about 300 people. So we thought about the sample, but had we had a panel, we would probably have negotiated. So those are things like that. Sometimes you do negligence in sectors where you really do need an expert to be on your panel. You will know that with government departments, the executive authority uses his or her powers to get certain skills. But because the Public Protector Act has not really been aligned fully with the fact that the Public Protector is equivalent to a minister, those powers, you've got to exercise them by law. You can't presume you have those powers. Until those powers are given to you by the Act, then we have to find ourselves under Section 217 of the Constitution and all of those other things. Some of it we remedy through our policy. The value of the Ubuntu, honourable chairperson, we agree with you. I think it was our constitutional court in S.S. Makwanyane that said this is an overriding value in our constitution, but we just put it in our values statement to remind ourselves that when we've done all else, it's not just enough to balance promptitude with rigor. It's just about treating everyone as a human being, whether they're government or they're complainants, whether they are rich or poor. It's about our team that we have got to ask ourselves, if the public protector way includes embracing the value of Ubuntu when we deal with anyone. And I agree with you, Honorable Chairperson, you could have been in our strategic planning meeting around talking about the discord between us and some organs of state was not really about our powers. It was about different interpretations of right and wrong. And if we do have that conversation about what really are our values, what is the new state that Madiba spoke about, the transformed state, what does it stand for in terms of how we use public power and how we use public resources, but generally in society, what is right and what is wrong under the new constitution. We would welcome that conversation. We wouldn't claim that we would be champions of it, but we would certainly claim that we would be a part of the critical mass of people that wants to be part of it. And in our own conversation, is we have requested plenary with Parliament. We've requested a revival of plenary with Cabinet, which we used to have except last year. And there was no discord, by the way, between us and the Minister of Justice. It's just that every time we're asking for a continuation of those conversations, it was not possible because there were all of these other things that were in the way. But we have agreed that we'll resume those conversations. And then, focusing on the society one. And then thank you, Honorable. The land issue is one of the issues that keeps coming up, especially the management of the land reform. Judge Sidi Lebam, asked me before he passed on, he had requested that we do a systemic on corruption in the handling of land redistribution. And I've always felt that we need to do that. But the team at the moment has a lot of cases around that. And we have take this up as a problem to the point that we've had several meetings with the Minister of Land Affairs. We also brought COCTA to the extent that it has a local government element, and we've spoken to some of the premiers about it, but Minister Nkwinti received as well. But I just think, Honourable Chairperson, we agree with you that, this year we said just from a thematic impact, when we talk about impact, we were going to make an impact on procurement, on aligning performance management with service delivery, because people get they get bonuses, they get team audits, they get good 100% performance on their strategy, but there's no alignment between what is put in those strategy and service delivery and service vessel. But we would want to consider land as one of the thematic areas, because from a rural Koko Dlamini point of view, it is an area that we already are seized with. It wouldn't require new resources. It would just require a new tweaking around the conversations we've already planned. And so I'm happy to include that. All right. Yes, we don't want the poor to be forever. Then I go to the questions posed by members. I do agree. Honorable Shivambo, thank you for the kind remarks in his absence. Regarding on the powers, all I can say is I've never been confused about the powers of the power protector. We need a different forum to discuss what happened, but the person who presented a distorted view in Parliament knows the truth. All he needed to do is just to present the whole court papers. And that person is somebody we have debated the powers in this committee. The first time the issue of powers became a hot potato, which we didn't think was, it was that person and another member of this committee that raised it with me. And what was our response in 2011 already was to make it the subject of a discourse in a good governance conference, where we had Madam Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, Minister of Home Affairs, participating and agreeing with us about our powers. Deputy Minister Nene, who was the Deputy Minister, then coming in and agreeing with us on our powers. And who else was there? There were several people at that good governance conference. So from our side, we've never been confused, but perhaps they need a forum to discuss what happened in court. But just collecting the whole court record would simplify the issue of powers, of what I said in court throughout the process. Regarding the funder model, I do agree with Honorable Shubambo that this parliament or the National Assembly does need to assist with the funding model. Honorable Chairperson, there was a decision by the National Planning Commission in the NDP, sir, that has been approved by the National Assembly. And it did say that we need additional funding. So our approach then was to anchor our request for additional funding on what the Constitutional Court has gauged, on what the Constitution says about our duty to be accessible to all persons and communities, but also understanding that this government has already made a decision that we need additional funding. The best way forward might be to make it clinical, maybe appoint a commission similar to the commission that is there now to do salaries of public office bearers. Because it would be clinical, non-political, to just get a committee of experts to look at what is the best way to fund. Just to say from our part, Honorable Members, our approach to funding this time, we have been advised by the former Auditor General that the structure of our office needs to be reviewed. From a corporate point of view, and I do, Honorable Maila, you asked that we should give you the organogram. We would love to do so, ma'am, because you will then see Honorable Matapo, I'm sorry about that. We would like you to just, in a quiet moment that you might have, look at the structure itself. Just look at our finance unit and say, would you structure a finance unit like that? Human resources unit. And all of this thing is historical because this was an office in the Department of Justice. I come from the South African Law Reform Commission, so our structure would have been rudimentary because we have backup in the Department of Justice. A lot of the stuff would be done there. We didn't even have a legal services unit, and when we were caught with this flood of reviews, we moved somebody from our good governance and integrity unit to do that at the expense of that unit. So for me, it's a clinical thing. But the best structure to compare us with is not all of the Chapter 9 institutions, is to compare us with the Auditor General. All right. Which is a Chapter 9 institution. Incidentally, some of those structures are incorrectly named ISDs. They're not ISDs in terms of the Constitution, but that's a debate for another day. And thank you, Honorable Shubambo, for saying the office needs to exist in every district. That was an original approval here in Parliament, but when the money thing became a problem, when the rent became a problem just globally, when there was a global problem, then the footprint has been delayed. Honorable Scott, it may be the last meeting, sir, and thank you for the kind words. The team did remind me, and I said it will depend on this committee, whether this committee allows the report to be brought here. My final report normally comes in October, but we don't know whether the date will be after the 14th, because after the 14th, I will not be House of Protectors. But it would be nice to bring the final report before I leave, but it's entirely up to this committee. Which just reminds me, having seen the advert, we had hoped that, like the Auditor General, the process would be done well ahead, because with them it was so keen. The person was appointed long ago, and there was a proper handover period. It was quiet moments where there was discussions around what the next person is going to do. Thank you for supporting the request for additional funding, and citing the Constitutional Court. And yes, the Honorable Scott, the review applications have put a burden on an already strained budget. Yes, government departments also get their money from the taxpayer, but they do have their own slush fund or their own funding for litigation. We've never had a litigation fund. We always use the state attorney. Throughout my life as a prosecutor, when we had little litigation, maybe a staff member or something like that, we use the state attorney. But now, the state attorney is on the other side, which answers your question, Honorable Machaza, also. When government sues us, the state attorney is on government side because they are an arm of the executive. And we are part of the state, but we're not part of the executive. But we still use them on issues where government is not suing us. But our request, Honorable Swartz, regarding the reviews was the one good thing that came from the Western Cape judgment. There were many good things there from an ombudsman point of view, so we can't just throw away that judgment. But one of the good things was that before you go forward, engage. So that's our simple request, Honorable Chairperson, that we ask departments to engage that. And the last thing, for example, I bought recently a municipality that had said it would accept the findings. In written response to the Section 7-9 notice. A week ago, I now got a paragraph that says we're taking us on review and there is a reason for review are going to follow. So they haven't even decided why they want to take us on review. But they've now sent a letter to say they're going to take us on review. And we're sitting now waiting for them to take us on review. Again, yes, we may be wrong, but we just think before you take us on review, it with us so that we can explain the reasons for this, so that we can save the taxpayer money. And I agree with Honorable Machake that we can't just waste this money. But for me, Honorable Machake, it's also, and through you, Honorable Chairperson, it's also about Gogo Dlamini. Gogo Dlamini can't eat my report, no matter how good the report is. And that's why the engagement, I know, for example, there was one Mr. You know, the one, the big one, that family that was really desperate. And the good thing is that they didn't rush on review, the municipality concerned. It kept just saying, no, we have this problem, we have this problem. And then eventually we set around to try and deal with the problem. And they are prepared now to pay the person the money. Because when we sit around and put our pieces together, we usually, in most cases, we found common ground when we discuss this thing. And it's Honorable Swartz about the funding model for the SIU. The Auditor General uses the same funding model as well. Whatever it does, it's funded by government. For us, we haven't made a decision. But the idea of having a committee that looks at the funding model is a matter of agency in response to the decision by government already that will be given additional funds as part of the National Development Plan would be an excellent idea, so would support that. And then the FISD in the Speaker's office is it assisting us. We had a good relationship with the office. We have not asked the office to assist us with the implementation of remedial action. So maybe we should ask that office. At the moment, in our strat plan, we said we're going to approach FOSFAT. We're going to have an engagement with cabinet. We also, in our strat plan, have said that we'll request plenary with parliament, because it's an accident of history that the Minister of Justice speaks on our behalf. Constitutionally speaking, that's improper. Because the Minister of Justice used to speak for the Advocate General, which was an office in his office, in his department. When we became an independent constitutional body, nothing in the law or the Constitution links us to the Minister of Justice. And through IOC, the African Ombudsman Research Center in Durban, they've done a preliminary view on other countries where an ombudsman is a constitutional body. You address parliament plenary. Because whoever is the power taker is an executive authority, and the constitution is very clear that that principle accounts to parliament, not to the Minister of Justice, who then accounts to parliament on our behalf. And just to speak about that, last year there was even a third case where somebody from the Department of Justice reported negatively about us to the National Assembly. Now, we were not there to answer for ourselves to the National Assembly. That went on record, that person's speech went on record. And it shouldn't have happened, and we're asking that even if it doesn't happen in my time, the complete removal of the park protector. I would like to address plenary though before I leave this park protector. It's a request. But I think the next park protector should just never ever address plenary of the National Assembly through the Department of Justice. We are not an entity of the Department of Justice. Thank you. Honorable Horn. Yes, again, I don't know in what regard did the Minister of Justice say there was a strained relationship, but I've clarified to Honorable Horn that there wasn't really a strained relationship. I think he just asked to hang on to things whilst there were so many things that were going on. But with the Minister of Justice, personally, for me and him, we were students together, so we have an excellent relationship as human beings. But of course, institutionally, he has to work institutionally. When government, cabinet had appointed him to chair a committee that engages with my team on how can we work together in pursuit of good governance. I kept writing to him about having a follow-up meeting, and he and his team, the security cluster, we're not ready for the next phase. But I don't think that the speech was personal. We really do have an excellent relationship. I don't even think there was a dispute. I just think maybe they were waiting for the dust to settle regarding the powers. Honorable Hun, I've answered the issue of consultants. I do take the point you've made and the point that has been made by all members of this parliament that we should use consultants cautiously. And I think it was honorable, I think one of the honorable members spoke about you don't want to have to hire lawyers as clerks to collect, to subcontract out to consultants. I am speaking without fear that I could ever be corrected when I say the Park Protector team is a team of hard workers. If they have to work at night, they work at night. If they have to work on Saturday, if they have to work on Good Friday, they work. It's not a case of them collecting a check and passing it to. Even the very fact that this very small team has been able to do the amount of work it does is because of the hard work. Because look at this committee, can just look at the SIU, how many people are put to investigation of a complex industry. And then you look at the Auditor General. When he sends a team to come and audit a department, how many people does he put on that team? And then you look at the sizes of teams. This government itself, some of the things that come to us, when this government decides to make then a commission of inquiry, you should look at how many resources, how much resources do you normally give to a commission of inquiry? And this team is trying its best to make it work. But if we want it to make work better, let's learn from what the National the Planning Commission said, that we do need more resources. And they said more resources in terms of quantity, number of investigations, but also the skill set in that team. And for now, we will have to deal with those consultants. But we welcome to talk to the committee quietly outside this again about where exactly are we going to use the consultants. To get rid of the budget. When we say consultants, we're talking about insourcing them because outsourcing didn't work for us. It's such an intricate process that you require to monitor the people that you have to hire. But last year we didn't hire any consultants. I'm not aware of it. The CEO, FO can explain if we did hire any consultants that I'm not aware of. And then the next question is the CEO that we introduced last year to the committee has sadly left for to pursue other gender options. She is serving notice until the end of April. And that is what has happened. Thank you. And then you've asked a good question, Honorable Horn, about if there were difficulties picked up by the Auditor General around some of the supply chain, because mostly that consultant, how we handled that one issue. That's the one that the Auditor General impaired. And that's why we now want to do it omnibus properly, and then we have a team. But we've also introduced what we call, what other teams have, SOPs. In all departments, like the Department of Justice, there are conventions. Everyone knows what is going to happen, even little things. But in new entities and in our small entity where people come and go, and when people go, the team that remains is small because our supply chain is tiny, our finance is tiny. The best way is to have standard operating protocols, and we've put there. Some of them have already been created. Some of the teams have created SOPs, but one of the things they are timed is standard operating protocols for everything, because then there'll be no reason why anybody would deviate, whether they knew or not. There's a clear path. Step one is this. Step two is this. Step three is this. But I must say that we've never had a systemic problem of violations. The Auditor General was very clear about where he had red carded us. That's why we've been confidently, you'll notice that last year we'd aimed for an unqualified audit. We confidently put a goal of a clean audit this time. Together with the team, it wasn't me. It was a team effort that agreed that if we are going to hold a municipality in Pope Arda accountable, we have to lead by example. And this whole strategy is really about taking our own internal governance to the next level and be leaders on clean governance, not just in red carding other people. Legal experts, we will use state attorney's staff. When the person suing us is not a government department, we'll continue to use the same thing. But we will, unfortunately, we will have to use them for the reviews. About pro bono, we have been offered pro bono. That's why they came up with a policy on volunteers, including the consultants. Some of the people that are going to be helping us, we're exploring getting people from law firms to come and work with us as part of their 20% pro bono. And we started a conversation early this year. No, it was towards the end of last year with the Law Society about that. So we are covering all bases about getting anything free that we can get.